it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The 0-2 pitch. Contreras bounces one to third. Suarez goes to second. One over to first. That is a double play, and the ball game is over. And the Reds have swept the Chicago Cubs by a score of 3-2. The Cubs losing streak, 9 in a row.
Yeah, I think we're grinding. I think guys are giving all their effort. I don't see any lack in concentration or focus. I see a willingness to fight through it. Just like seems like an inning or so just doesn't go our way. Gotta have a lockdown inning. Kyle pitched well. The at-bats are there. We threw some hits out there. I'm hitting some double plays kind of cost us tonight. But for the most part, the at-bats, I feel like up and down the line are continuing to get better.
Rosie, I think David Ross is just saying stuff at this point. Does he even know what he's saying? I mean, he's just like saying stuff. None of it really. I mean, what do you say after you lose 9 in a row, right?
You talk until you think you can stop talking and hope nobody has any more questions about why your team sucks.
Yeah, we're trying hard. Our bats are getting better. We think we're close. It's going to happen. We'll see. Hendricks was good. Talk to you later.
Okay. The day after, remember, and Jed Hoyer was saying the same thing where he tried to massage this fecal matter of a streak, and this was on Friday, and said, well, one thing I liked the way the end of this was we're starting to work a little deeper counts, we're starting to draw more walks. So that night they walked twice. No, they're not yet. And the offensive problem is such that you're dealing with a team that until yesterday when they had 11 hits, they had not gotten more than 8 hits in 20 straight games. And that's significant because that ties them for the second worst stretch ever. Only the 1968 Yankees, who went 22 games, failing to get more than 8 hits. So they're tied with the 72 Mets. It's just a failure of the offense. And when you say launch angle is real, opposing teams say, so are high fastballs. You can't catch up to them and you can't lay off them. And this has been what the Dodgers have done since 2017 to the Cubs, and everybody else is doing it too. Should they be expected to adjust? Should they wait for Theo to make rule changes? Because that's where they seem to be, right?
Yeah,
they seem to be waiting for. Theo, help us. Make rule changes for baseball.
Right, where's our Matt Duffy? Well, you got your Nico Hoerner back. Your Matt Duffy is not back yet. You got your Sogard and all these contact guys. And during this losing streak, too, to accentuate your point, the Cubs are averaging 2.4 runs per game during the 9-game losing streak. And to say that you're having good at-bats is a bunch of crap because, how do you not get to Amir Garrett when he was out of his mind with the way he was throwing the baseball in that ninth inning? It was as awful as I've seen any pitcher. It was just like a guy losing it out there, and the Cubs were not able to do anything with that. And by the way, did you see the seventh inning where Andrew Chafin is out there and Jesse Winker hits the RBI or the ground out to Baez, who gets the force at second and then goes to third instead of first? And I think that was probably their best chance. The run scores on it. But I never really heard much post game in regards to that and to what Baez saw, what Chafin saw, what David Ross saw. It was just an interesting play of consequence because it scores the go-ahead run.
I did not hear. I've not seen anything. I don't know. They usually when it involves Javi in the field, it has to be so spectacular for anybody to comment on it, that spectacularly great or spectacular brain fart that it's going to be such a mess. But they'll defer to his decision. I think that's what.
No, I think he made the right choice. I just, unless I missed it, I just haven't heard any reaction to it because it's the game-winning run on that particular play. But I guess we probably needed to focus more on Dan Winkler hitting your guy, Jonathan India, with the bases loaded in the seventh inning.
What a thing. Yeah. The Cubs bullpen has been largely good. They just, as Jed said, you can't expect your bullpen to be perfect. You can't expect them that they're not going to protect every one-run lead. Every one-run lead that if you're lucky enough to get it, and yesterday was a two-run lead, and then, yeah, he hits a guy. There's your time run scores on a hit by pitch. It's like, oh,
yeah.
Well, this is really, and your offense is going to do nothing. But there's Contreras up with a tying and a potential winning run on base, and Wilson Contreras is up, and there's your 5-4-3 game-ending double play. We're trying to reach Tony Andracki of Marquee to talk about the Cubs. We're talking about the Cubs even without him. Tony had made a case. I don't know if we're going to get him, but I'd save this. He had made the point that while the Cubs were choking and the Brewers were just soaring, and now they're in first place by 8.5 over the third place Cubs, who were jumped by the Reds. The Reds just swept the Cubs. That they're talking about, he was talking about the Brewers playing 17 games in June against the Diamondbacks, Rockies, and Pirates. They went 14-3 against the three worst teams in the National League. Meanwhile, the Cubs are playing more than half their, played a lot of games against teams vying for postseason. And they had West Coast trips. Well, you can't say they're paying. For two reasons this bothers me. One is, they beat the Padres good. And the Padres are one of the teams that has a better record than the Cubs, had a better record than the Cubs. And they beat them wherever he wanted to play them. And also, the Cubs were, a month ago, they were one of three teams, one of only three NL teams, the Brewers and the Giants were the other, who had a winning record against teams 500 or better. So you can't tell me they're playing good teams and that's why the Cubs are losing. The Cubs beat good teams. They spent the season beating teams that had 500 or better records. So I don't buy that. You're looking at, how do you explain the Reds? They sucked against the Reds.
Right, absolutely. And you made what I think is a good Milwaukee team feel like a great Milwaukee team considering what they just did to you, right? I mean, like, that was, like, if you want to make the case that Milwaukee's schedule has been poor lately and they've been pouncing on bad teams, well, the Cubs had a chance to put an end to that. If you consider the Cubs a good team, which I did, then you're supposed to go in there and give them a little bit more battle instead of getting swept in that series. So they launched Milwaukee to a different stratosphere, one where they feel like they can run away with a division which everybody deemed as mediocre at the beginning of the year. Suddenly you have a team feeling great about itself, and now you have a Cubs team which is alarmingly in third place and at 500, man. I mean, if Zach Davies can't pull off another combined no-hitter tonight against the Phillies here on the score, you're going to be under 500. What is that? Like, seriously, the symbolism of under 500, if that's what we're dealing with tomorrow when we all wake up, as if we haven't already made some grand pronunciations about this team, it's real, real if they dip under 500 in terms of everything. All bets are off, as if they aren't off already.
That'll be discussed with Mike Mulligan and David Heehaw.
Heehaw.
5
a.m. Heehaw?
Tomorrow. Is it? Do we confirm that?
No, we have not. David, I don't know what Studs is doing back there. I mean, really. I mean, we haven't confirmed that. This is just ridiculous. So, I don't know. David Haw, were you David Heehaw when you were a superstar country jock back in the day? Somebody texted us and told us that. So we are trying to get confirmation on Heehaw.
To another subject matter we've been discussing, 630, where on that list you're talking about is you're going to need a bigger boat, or we're going to need a bigger boat. And that, on AFI's list of 100 top movie quotes in 100 years, was number 35. You're going to need a bigger boat.
And that is
Gary Grody listening? I don't want him to miss all these.
You know, I should have reached out. Yeah. I hope Gary Grody, because there's no way I'd be able to explain to him how to rewind on the Odyssey app. So I don't even want to go through that. I mean,
number 15. Well, tell him number 15 is ET phone home. Maybe he'll understand that.
Okay. Yeah, that's very easy. Yes.
Yeah.
ET phone home.
Number 19, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take this anymore. Do you know where that's from?
Yeah, I do. It's that movie. Yeah, I can't. I know the movie and I can't think of the title of it. But it actually translates very well to what has happened with TV news today.
Yeah. Network is the name of the movie.
That's it.
Howard Beale was the character.
A run-of-the-mill news guy who turns into a highly opinionated news guy, and that's what
that was today. Prophetic, wasn't it?
More like pathetic.
Pathetic. Yeah. Thanks, Les. Number 20, Louis, I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship. It's the last line in Casablanca.
Yeah, that's it.
Arguably the greatest movie ever. So that's it. I wanted to make sure Gary Grody got his share of these movie lines from AFI. And it's interesting that it would be that it's such a signature line, number 22, Bond. James Bond.
Right, in every movie.
Yeah. Right.
Gary Grody, here's another Gary Grody-ism from recently. This is great. So my dad, you know, turned 80 recently. I saw him the other day, and he was asking about the show, and he said, hey, by the way, what's this, you guys are always talking to some guy, Panda or something like that, or Trash, or he's like, what's that all about? And so I had to explain the whole story and Trash Panda, and for people who don't know, a Trash Panda is a raccoon, or do you say raccoon, and they call them trash pandas because they consider them to be a varmint and an animal that needs to be murdered. So there it is.
Well, we did have Trash Panda say it for us, and it caused some consternation. Right, Trash Panda?
I'm sorry, what?
What are you doing?
He's doing his own show. He's not even listening. He doesn't
know what?
Get Tony Andracki.
Behind the scenes, guys, I'm trying to get a hold of Tony. I'm also working on another show that's on after you guys. So, like, give me a little break, okay?
That's great. We're so happy that you're listening to the show. And you think holiday suckage is just gratuitous? No, it really does suck. That's for sure. By the way, would Gene and Gary Grody want to renew their vows if we had this mass
wedding? Oh, my God.
Because it would be open to, as we have Trash Panda, be the officiant of this giant ceremony. You could imagine Gene Hodges is it. And renewing their vows, number 35, Gene Grody, number 35.
Gary Grody.
Yeah. See, there you go. They could renew their vows, and that would go for... And imagine that Gary Grody's question would get answered as he watches this Trash Panda officiate a ceremony that is helping him and Gene, the love of his life, renew their vows. I'm telling you, it's a great picture with all these couples out in guaranteed right field.
At this point, I'd be concerned that if he was officiating that wedding, he'd be more focused on another wedding. You know, because
another wedding.
He's more focused on another show right now. I don't know what's going on. You know.
Yeah. Don't bother me, Brooks Boyer. Yeah. I'm working on the Scheinblum wedding.
Is Go Out and Win One for the Gipper on there? Asks a texter from the 408.
It is. Number 89, Newt Rockne, All-American, made in 1940. Tell them to go out there with all they got and win just one for the Gipper.
Nice.
Yeah.
And seriously, in all seriousness, is anything from, you know, I joked about, you switched the sample. Is that on there or no? That none of those, you find this man. Or is that just in my own little world?
In your head and your impression toolbox, there is nothing. They live there. There's nothing from The Fugitive.
I'd have 100
on the
quotes,
AFI list.
100 quotes from The Fugitive by Mark Grody.
Yeah, that would be good. Yeah. All right.
The doctor is not well. He's not well. Yes. Yes, okay. I could do that.
All right. So we are going to take a break if Trash Band is awake. And we will, when we come back, we will do that Bears talk that we had suggested before. Before, as a texter mentions, Toby did hijack that segment.
Ooh, very good. Very good.
So anyways, we're gonna do that. And we'll be back with this on Holiday Suckage. Steve Rosenblum, Mark Grody. We suck so you don't have to, so you can enjoy your holiday. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
And here's a Gary Grody favorite, number 98 on AFI's list of 100 top movie quotes. Nobody puts baby in the corner.
Yeah.
1987, I know that's a...
Bilal Nichols, number 98.
Number 99, I'll get you, my pretty, and your little dog, too.
And your little dog, too.
We'll just bounce around with some of these. So anyways, he's Mark Grody, I'm Steve Rosenblum. We're talking Bears here on The Score on Holiday Suckage. It's not Saturday Suckage, it's Monday Suckage, but it will be Saturday Suckage soon, and we'll see if Tony Andracki is available by next Saturday. Let's see how that works out.
Do we have a show on Saturday?
Yeah, we're supposed to. I don't. Okay, if nobody important listens, we'll be back on Saturday. So there was, Brad Biggs wrote a story, a column, a piece, an update. So you're keeping track. The opt-out deadline for players was Friday, last Friday, July 2nd. So far, I've not heard any word on whether Eddie Goldman wanted to do that again, whether he would opt out the way he did last year. And so there leaves a question. There's a hole in the middle of the Bears' defensive line where the run stopper is supposed to be. So he opted out last year, as did many nose guards, defensive tackles, when you had to make a decision. And really, there was a lot of the science was unknown. And you're in the middle of everything. You're a mess. You have no idea what the contagion factor is. And I could see why a lot of players made that decision to opt out the way Eddie Goldman did. But anyways, run defense slipped to 15th last year, and he was out the year before out in 2016, and they were bad then too. So have you heard anything? Has he made a decision? How could they not be bad against the run next year if he's not there? I assume if he's there, they're going to be good. They're going to be better. So handicap it for us. Size it up for us, Mark.
Yeah, I think we would know if he was opting out for the year. I think at this point there is some mystery as to whether or not he could possibly be thinking about retirement. And we don't know what would be good. We haven't heard from Eddie, as you said. So we just don't know what's going on with him. You know, his decision to opt out, we don't know what exactly went into that. We don't know what went into him skipping out on the mandatory minicamp. And it's there is nothing coming from the Eddie Goldman camp at this point. So as of right now, we are left to assume that he will be in Lake Forest for training camp at the end of the month unless he decides to retire. Now, if that is the case, then unless you have something done schematically or a refocus on stuffing the run, then you're going to have some problems, because not only let's just say Eddie Goldman is gone, I mean, you don't have... You know, Brent Urban was a rotational player, but he did contribute to it. So it would be really difficult to assume that the Bears were going to stop some of those dramatic runs that they dealt with last year from game one of the season when old man Adrian Peterson was bursting through for the Detroit Lions against the Bears in game one, and we saw way too much of it, quite frankly, for the last 2 years. So, you know, you have added Angelo Blackson, a defensive tackle as well, to the roster this year, and you know, hopefully he will perform, but I think that there are some problems and some issues, and maybe, you know, Sean Desai is just what the Bears need in terms of a regrouping and, you know, getting back to, you know, better matchups and putting players in positions to succeed and having to improvise a little bit, whereas I don't know that that creativity was there or the ability to draw outside of the lines under Chuck Pagano. So hopefully you get back to some of that with Sean Desai, because this is going to be a tough coaching job for him. This is where coaching really comes in handy, because if you don't have the raw talent that you once had and you have a guy in Akeem Hicks who is aging too, by the way, you know, I mean, he's not getting any younger, and you hope that Hicks comes back and has an explosive season. I think he does have a couple of those years left, but you still are expecting Khalil Mack to get back to form, a form which he has not been in for the last 2 years. You're hoping that Eddie Jackson gets back into a form. He did not have a good year last year. So, and then not to mention the, you know, the missing of Kyle Fuller, and hoping that Jalen Johnson becomes your undisputed number one lockdown on one side, and then whomever on the other side. So there's it's fun. I'm glad you brought this up, because while it is still about the offense and getting that right, and the quarterback is number one with a bullet with Justin Fields and Andy Dalton and Nick Foles, a lot of questions about the defense still.
And you brought up Sean Desai, and I was going to ask the question, what in his incarnation and his time under Vic Fangio and being the disciple that he is, different from... How would, as you said, color outside the lines, how would defensive tackles be allowed to do that? How would, what would his defense allow to, so they wouldn't suck against the run, so they'd be able to end series after three plays and get Justin Fields' offense back out there?
Well, that's a good question. And I don't know, because we haven't seen it. But one thing that I've been wondering about is how much patience they are going to have this year for Robert Quinn. Because if Quinn performs like he did last year, and, you know, you have some guys who I think that they would be more prone to putting or giving more time to in the rotation, like Trevis Gibson, a fifth round pick from last year, who, you know, we saw little bits and pieces of, but he gets a full offseason and training camp this year, does Trevis Gibson. You have James Vaughters, another guy who, you know, has been used carefully and put in good positions, so it appears that he succeeds. But just from hearing Sean Desai, you know, discussing that position, I just wonder if there's going to be a quick hook, as it were, on Quinn and trying different things like that. As far as, like, coloring outside the lines, you know, I don't know what that looks like under Sean Desai. I'm just assuming that if it is this group and you don't have Eddie Goldman, you have to get creative, right? Like, you have to do things. You have to generate things, create things to put pressure on the quarterback, to stop the run, smart things like that. So we'll see, and I'm looking forward to seeing what a Sean Desai-led defense looks like, because right now you need coaching. You need it badly on that side of the ball.
Do you run blitz more, I wonder? Would he run blitz more if you don't have something as surefire, something as good?
Yeah.
And we don't know how Eddie Goldman's going to come back, by the way. Getting old Eddie Goldman back doesn't mean you're getting that guy at a Pro Bowl level necessarily. You don't know what you're going to get after a year of not doing anything. He could be wonderfully refreshed. He could be a terror. Or maybe it's rusty. Maybe he's hesitant. You don't know what you're getting, do you? Is there any way?
That's
we
a great
know?
Point. That's a and you know what? The larger point too is Eddie Goldman is good, But it's not like Eddie Goldman was great. You know what I mean? Like, he's still, like, you could start to make a conversation for him getting into the top five of nose tackles, but I don't think he was there yet. And even in his last season in 2019, I remember being around his locker and him admitting it wasn't a great season for him and that he was determined to get better. And then everything happened, of course, with COVID. So, yeah, what's he going to be like when he comes back? Is he in shape? You know what I mean? Like, is part of why he didn't show up to the mandatory minicamp because he wasn't football ready, you know? So I don't know. Yeah, it's not like when he steps in there, all of a sudden you have your savior because he was like a pro. He wasn't. He was very good and worthy of the contract extension that the Bears gave him and does do the dirty work, but it's not like he has become a superstar savior to this defense. So it's going to be interesting, and I hope he's back, and I hope he's okay, like, personally, from a personal standpoint, but sure. Right now I feel like nobody has a succinct answer on Eddie Goldman.
Did I misread this? Am I misremembering this, Roger Clemens? Did I read hear where Matt Nagy said he saw Eddie Goldman in the hallways, he was there, he looked in good shape. Now, they didn't see him on the field doing anything, but
that's
didn't
true.
He say... So he wasn't, it wasn't like he was waddling in, right? Did
that's
Matt
true.
Nagy say that?
Yeah, he did say something to that effect, but I think that's one of those things where, what's he going to say? Like, if you ask, have you seen Eddie Goldman? Yeah, I've seen him. He looks fat, not in shape, so we don't think he's ready to play football. So that... I don't know that you call that, like, you accuse Matt Nagy of lying, but I don't know that he's necessarily – I don't know if Matt Nagy knows. You know what I mean? How could he know if Eddie Goldman is truly in football shape? He has no idea.
No, I did. Well, it prompted a question because I always believe that as whatever people thought of Jerry Krause, and one of the charges leveled at him was that he lied. And Jerry Krause would, if he lied, if he told you something that wasn't true or right, it was because he was never going to tell you anything that might hurt him or his franchise or his team. Right. And then John Paxson was a guy who couldn't, like, totally incapable of lying. He would find a way to say something, and you could connect the dots, you could read between the lines. He wasn't going to lie to you. That's just the way Paxson was. For whatever faults there were, John Paxson was not going to lie. So it struck me in your answer, is Matt Nagy capable of lying? Can he lie other than saying Mitch looked great and he's caught on to this crap? But not even he would lie or sound as stupid as Ryan Pace, saying that what even after this horrible year that Mitch Trubisky was accurate in the way he processed stuff. And it was like Ryan Pace was just a blithering idiot and he didn't care and Bears management was sleeping. But is Matt Nagy going to lie to you?
He's not going to lie. He's just not going to tell us everything that's going on. And we can quibble over whether that's lying or not. But that's just the way of the NFL. And they don't feel like we are entitled to know every little thing. Like, you know, there's always injuries that we don't know about and things that are going on, and we're never going to get the realness. And part of the good of Matt Nagy is that he is able to put a smile, a good foot forward on the organization and make it feel okay, because That's the thing about Matt Nagy, is that being part of every single one of his press conferences, as I have, there have been very few times where you sense real frustration or anger with a question or a scenario or fumbling you know what I mean? Like, there was always an answer from Matt Nagy that seemed to make sense, even if it didn't really make sense, and even if that wasn't really the answer. Does that make sense or no?
Yeah, it does. He was not unprepared, right? What you're saying.
Correct.
Certain things. Sometimes he got a red ass over something, but you don't know if that was at the question, the way it was phrased, or just that it brought up an issue that he really didn't want to deal with, and he's falling on somebody else's grenade in the course.
It's like Joe Madden. It's like Madden. Like Madden, you could never, like, no matter how bad things got, Madden was always able to compartmentalize and realize it was one game and all of that stuff. Whereas you see, you could see the anger and hear the anger sometimes with David Ross. Just that's just because he is who he is. And I think also Joel Maddon is a true rarity, that he had that skill to be able to make it feel, even though things would be bad and the backs were against the wall and horrible things were happening, it's like, is this going to be the day that Joel Maddon goes off? No, never happened, and never has happened with Matt Nagy either. So it's very difficult to get a read on what's really going on and what the real conversations are.
You know, I think the Maddon-Ross comparison is interesting. I never thought of it that way, but it struck me that David Ross, and this isn't even being a teammate with these guys, but it's a guy who knows what the pregame preparation is like, and it's not just when the media is allowed into the clubhouse. It starts before that. He knows what it looks like, what it sounds like, what it feels like, doing it at different levels, doing it at the highest level in different winning teams, in different winning clubhouses. And and Joe Maddon didn't seem as sensitive to it,
no.
Whereas David Ross put a lot of emphasis on it. So when you see that anger, I wonder if some of it traces back to you weren't ready to play this game. And then he gives you the pap answer that we heard of, you know, where the guys are grinding, we're really trying, it's not for lack of effort, blah, blah, blah.
Well, part of that, too, and that was the David Ross soundbite we heard, is all of that, like, he's protecting himself, too, because if they're not trying hard, if they're not competing on every pitch, that's a reflection on the manager. So any manager, coach, or any worth his soul will never, ever, ever say anything about effort. Like, that's all just the and in this case, David Ross, to some degree, protecting himself and his own pride. Remember the Javier Baez. Javier Baez when he benched him. And Ross even said something, like paraphrasing, that's an indictment on me when you're not out there hustling. And that's why he benched his ass at that point.
Wasn't it hustle as much as it was not paying attention to the game? You lost track of bouts.
Right. And Ross, he said it. He said that hey, man, that's personal. When you do that, You're taking a shot at me. So there is an exact, concrete example of a manager or coach or any boss of any team on any field or rink or ice, that if effort is in question, whoa, hold the show. I can handle you making a physical error, but if you're going to be lollygagging, that's on me.
Okay.
Oh, Lou made an appearance. Hey, Lou.
Yeah, I know. Hey, lollygag. What do we call them? Lollygaggers. Right, we're going to take a break. We're going to lollygag for a couple minutes. Then we come back. There's a question on the other side of the line. We'll discuss that with Mark Bears. Offensive line. I'm Steve Rosenblum. He's Mark Grody. It's holiday suckage. We suck so you don't have to, so you can enjoy a long weekend. And nothing feels longer than listening to this five-hour suckathon. That's just the way we serve the public. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Welcome in, welcome back to the five-hour suckathon. We're in hour four, 312 texter. Unfortunately, you were right about that, Steve. Sometimes you guys suck so bad, you make me want to stab my ear with a pen. Five hours of this today? Maybe both ears. Well, that's how we help you people. Top of the hour.
Are we taking donations on this suckathon or no?
How much will people pay Spilkes not to put us on the air? But we're sucking so you don't have to. We're doing our best for the public. We're American heroes. Jeremy Frank.
What about Rosenblum and Grody?
Yeah, what about? Right. There you go. That's it. We'll talk with Jeremy Frank. He runs the Twitter site at MLB Random Stats. They are very random. He started that. He named it when he was 15. He's still not out of college. That's how long he's been doing it, how well, and how it's just a great thing. We want to talk to him about that. Anyways, the other side of the line, Greg Gabriel, a former Bears scouting director and a regular on The Score, he tweeted out recently, many have felt that Tevin Jenkins will struggle at left tackle. yet he has 7 starts at left tackle, and the tape is good. Not only that, but only 8 starting left tackles in the NFL tested better than Jenkins. Some of the 8, it was only marginally better. So that's a scout looking at it from through the prism of tape, and this is the way they evaluate it. And the idea that he's there, he's moving there, he's going to be the guy. And the question then is, who's he going to be protecting? But if we're going to judge the quarterback and who gets what snaps and everything, will there be just as much on Tevin Jenkins, just as much spotlight, focus, just as many tally marks for mistakes or good plays when training camp opens?
100%, because I've been saying that if Tevin Jenkins is a good left tackle, if he is, and they put him in there on September 12th at the Rams in prime time, and he's good, then I think that it's possible that the offensive line is a position of strength this year, because you are getting James Daniels back, and hopefully he is in form and like he was before he had the torn pectoral muscle last year. And you have Cody Whitehair, no doubt about it, he is a guard, and Sam Mustipha, like, that interior is really good. So if you have your tackles in place, I don't see why the Bears offensive line wouldn't be a position of strength. So, you know, they have been, in watching the offseason stuff that I've been right in front of and in Lake Forest for, you know, they've been using Tevin Jenkins there, but also getting a lot of time at the tackle positions has been Elijah Wilkinson. So they are showing us, at least to some degree, a potential backup plan. And Elijah Wilkinson is, you know, played more right tackle with Denver in 7 games last year, but he is a capable player as well. But yeah, it really does come down to Tevin Jenkins. And I don't know, I haven't heard many people saying that Tevin Jenkins can't play left tackle. I mean, I'm glad that Greg Gabriel says he can, but I haven't heard a lot of pushback on that. Have you?
No, I have not. But there's always the question is, can he? And while there will be a spotlight on him, not as great as on quarterback, but there will be a spotlight on him. This is where you just don't know how good. That's the question. He could play it. He could probably do it admirably. He could probably make it worthwhile for the Bears. But would somebody get hurt in the process? And then we talked about this months ago, that Andy Dalton's the reason you start him. You start Andy Dalton at quarterback because you're not sure about Tevin Jenkins.
Not a bad theory.
Andy Dalton be the Sears crash test dummy, and when Tevin Jenkins gets it right, then you can put in Justin Fields. And you say, well, he can run around. Justin Fields can play there anyways. Well, see Pat Mahomes for detail when your tackles don't work. Pat Mahomes could run around pretty good too. You see that Super Bowl? He wasn't much good at that. So right. I'm not denying the athletic ability of Justin Fields. I'm more concerned with the safety of the quarterback. And here's what I wish. I don't know that they would ever do it, but you could, in practice, when it matters, if you want to see where Tevin Jenkins was, wouldn't you put Khalil Mack over him? Mm-hmm. Say, block this guy?
Yeah, absolutely. No,
Do you remember in training camp, have they swapped sides with Khalil Mack and just give everybody a chance to just use him as the barometer? Here's the gold standard. Can you block him or not?
I did not notice that at all in the training camps with Khalil Mack, but that's, I like that idea, and we'll see what kind of things that they do when we all get together in July for training camp. But no, because you're right, because they cut Charles Leno Jr., right? So they are saying we are going to have, like, Tevin, And what it is Tevin Jenkins is going to get the first shot, you know? I mean, they're not going to hand it to him because they just – that's, like, the philosophy of the team. We're not just going to say, yes, you're a rookie and you will be our starter. You know, you at least have to give the appearance that there is competition at that position, and maybe that's why I'm seeing a lot of Elijah Wilkinson when I have watched the Bears practice this year. So, and then you also have Larry Borum out of Missouri, the fifth round pick.
He's doing Mike Tice.
I don't know why.
Because it was Larry.
It was because of Larry Mayer,
was the
right?
Key. Larry. Right.
Larry Borum. But, yeah, I mean, you should probably throw everything possible at Tevin Jenkins, because while he was a highly successful offensive lineman in college at a big-time program, you never know how it transfers to the NFL level, and we've seen that with Bears draft picks in the past with a Mark Colombo or a Chris Williams. I'm trying to think of some of the other highly
those
rated.
Were injuries. Those are, you know,
yeah, they were injuries. Thing, you're right.
It's one,
you're right.
One thing to see a healthy guy not live up to the draft status or the expectations, and that was tough going. But we saw Mark Colombo could play. He just did it for the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, exactly. He was very good with the Dallas Cowboys. I don't think.
Yeah.
I don't know that Chris Williams thrived anywhere else, unless I'm missing something. But he might have been an early retirement guy. I'd have to look that up. But I'm really interested to see, because they told you. I mean, really, you could say, other than Justin Fields, the theme of this Bears offseason has been the offensive line. You know, that was a big deal, letting Charles Leno Jr. go. You know what I mean? Like, in saying we are going to expose ourselves at what some still consider to be the most important position on the offensive line, and in your left tackle and, you know, both tackle spots for that matter. Although I think Afedi will comport himself just fine on the right side, but who knows? You know, if he struggles, will somebody like Larry Borum be put in, or even Tevin Jenkins, or to a lesser degree, Elijah Wilkinson?
We were at an interesting crossroads in that when Ryan Pace, the interim GM, came from New Orleans. They had Sean Payton and Drew Brees. I guess, you know, there's more people, but anyways, that was them. They were the faces of this. They were the stars of this. Their view of the offensive line was guard to guard, not the tackles on the outside. They were much more concerned with if they had a strong interior, they were going to have clean passing lanes for a quarterback who was 6 foot. Well, the prospective Bears number one quarterback is more like a small forward than he is a point guard. And I've not heard whether their philosophy has changed to the old school of get your tackles right or you're not going to have a quarterback left to put together to play, or if they're still emphasizing the interior, because the interior, as you were describing, figures to be really good, really strong with James Daniels coming back.
Play to your strengths, right? I mean, and I guess that, you know, unless, you know, Tevin Jenkins comes out and he's like a star out there and you could play to his side and play to him, but I think that would be wise of the Bears. I mean, if, you know, Sam Mustipher continues to be really good at center. I mean, he's the only mystery on the interior. Like, I think he's good and in for the long haul, but we don't know that for sure. I'm pretty positive about Cody Whitehair and James Daniels. And by the way, multiple textures reminding me of Gabe Karimi. That's another one. Very good. And then, of course, Stan Thomas, who was a Ditka guy. Or actually, wasn't
that was a Michael
guy.
McCaskey pick.
Yeah, Ditka did not like Stan Thomas, and they started him from day one, as I recall. And
No. Actually, he started because I can't remember who got hurt, but there was an injury, and he played. Keith Van Horn, I think, got hurt.
Really?
And
Yeah,
and he played in his first preseason game. He false started, I think. It did not go well.
Sounds about right.
Not go well, yeah.
But I was excited about all those guys, too. I'm not going to lie. I liked Stan Thomas when they drafted him. I like Gabe Karimi. I like Mark Colombo, Chris Williams, and Tevin Jenkins. So
wasn't
hopefully
Gabe Karimi your guy, your offensive line coach? Larry. Wasn't Gabe Karimi one of the favorite tabbed by Mike Tice?
I think he was.
There was some...
Gabe Kareem. I like Gabe Kareem. He's very good. Very good. Larry.
Larry.
Look at me. Look at me, Larry. Look at me, Gary
Kareem. We're done with this.
We're
going to take a break. When we come back, a young man has a website called a Twitter site called MLB Random Stats. They couldn't be more random, and they're a lot of fun. And he's probably only halfway through college, and he started this when he was 15, and it's a lot of fun. And I wanted to talk to the young man, so that's what we're going to do after this. Steve Rosenblum, Mark Grody, it's holiday suckage for you. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.